This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 34 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
David, we may have been a little too aggressive in our topic list for this episode. We've kind of got a lot.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's more interesting, the fact that we're at recording episode 34 on 4-3, or the fact that we have probably like 20 articles to discuss tonight. Our topics include the FAA COE for UAS, UAV matrix printing, the industry pressures the FAA on UAS regulations, missing one DJI Phantom reward offered, a thought-controlled quadcopter, drones used for and against hunters, anti-drone legislation, Korean drone crashes, and who needs drones when you have gulls? And last but not least, the video of the week, which is drones for tooth extraction, or the tooth drone. Well, our first story tonight, folks, is notice of intent to establish the FAA Centers of Excellence, COE, for unmanned aircraft systems. That's a lot of letters for one place. So within the next year, the FAA intends to competitively select a center of excellence for the UASs. The center will conduct UAS-related research, education, and training, and also will work with university partners on issues of mutual interest and concern. And this was an official FAA.gov statement.
This center is not one place. It's really a collection or a group of universities and their affiliates. And the FAA establishes centers of excellence in a number of different areas, so this one for UAS is not unique. Under this arrangement, what happens is the FAA provides matching grants for specific projects. And the FAA has announced the selection criteria for applicants, and that includes things like the needs of the state represent the needs of the region, the resources that the applicant has available, their leadership ability, if they have an established air transportation program, and do they have an education program that they can use to disseminate the results of the study. And also, kind of last but probably not least, the research projects that are proposed. That's kind of interesting. The research areas are also interesting.
The research areas, there's nine research areas, and they sort of, in my opinion, Max, parallel our test centers.
Yes.
When we talked about the test centers, we talked about, is the information going to be disseminated and it's passed between the various test centers? And I think this is the FAA coming up with the nexus to do all of that. The Center of Excellence and all of the grants that are going with it will work with the test centers to disseminate the information and work on the information. So this is, we've got a place to test the data, and now we're going to have a place to work with the data.
Yeah, because you're right that when you look at the list of nine research areas, they do sound a lot like the missions of the six UAS test centers. And providing this sort of hub, I guess this is, like you say, David, makes sense. Now, the FAA has created a Center of Excellence for UAS website, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes so you can take a look at that. There's not too much there yet, but as that develops, I'm sure there'll be more content. And what happens next with all this, David? What does the FAA do next?
Well, there's an application selection criteria. Those are the requirements you're going to have to fill out and submit to the FAA, and then I'm sure there are going to be a review process, and they'll narrow it down, and then eventually they'll pick the centers.
Now, the FAA says that they will issue a draft solicitation for public comment. That sort of kicks things off. And then in May, they will hold a public meeting in Washington, D.C. And then they say they will issue the awards within, quote, the next year. Hopefully that means the next 12 months.
Well, you mean to tell me we're not going off our normal rule, which means add 5 to 10 years to any time the FAA says one?
Boy, I hope not. I really hope not. So moving on, we have kind of a technology issue. This is kind of interesting. Additive manufacturing, which is more popularly called 3D printing, has been used by the Advanced Manufacturing Research Center at the University of Sheffield to build a UAV. Now, this is a polymer UAV. It's made of 9 parts that snap together. Something that can be built at a low cost, that could also be built on demand. Maybe it's even a disposable UAV.
3D printing and UAVs are sort of been parallel developments. They sort of been intermixed. And the more we talk about UAVs, the more we talk about 3D printing. So, and we can't not mention that our sponsor is a big proponent and does a lot of 3D printing. So it's an important aspect of the UAVs to us here, Max. Huh? Don't you agree?
Yeah, and I think this is fascinating. Already I can say that, you know, this whole industry, small UAS especially, really empowers people to do a lot of things that couldn't be done before. And being able to essentially print one on demand to your needs, your specifications, it kind of takes that one step farther. And I think it's, like I say, it's really an empowering sort of thing. This technology is fascinating. We're seeing a lot of aerospace companies embrace 3D printing in a lot of different ways. So it's pretty cool to see that work being done here in the UAV portion of the industry.
And the sci-fi geek in me is just says Star Trek was just ahead of the game again. 3D printing is awfully close to replicators.
That's right.
Science fiction is becoming science fact. And that just leads us to our next story about consumer tech lobbies joined forces to push for domestic drone regulations. This was from National Defense Magazine. Aerospace and consumer electronics industries are teaming up to pressure the FAA into moving quickly to define the regulations regarding UAS operations. So clearly, there's a group of individuals, and this is consumer electronics, that are pushing into the drone industry, and they want to be able to market their products because there's a lot of electronics in UASs and UAVs. And in order to become even more profitable, we need the FAA to step it up to provide the rules and regulations. It's kind of strange, Max. This is the only industry I know that's chafing at the bit for someone to actually set down rules.
These companies see a huge potential economic value of getting into this industry, and they want to jump in, and they want to start providing products and services to a much greater extent than we have already. So you have these two big powerhouses, the Aerospace Industries Association and the Consumer Electronics Association. I mean, these are big organizations, represent lots of companies. Interestingly enough, the current CEO of the Aerospace Industries Association is Marion Blakey, who was a previous FAA administrator. And so she knows something about how the FAA works. So she's signed this letter sent to the FAA, as has Gary Shapiro from the CEA.
Yeah, Shapiro actually has an interesting quote in the article where he says, "It's conceivable that the FAA might issue emergency rules to fill the gap until it completes the formal rules to prevent people from thinking they have a free pass." Mm. Actually, and this was from a attorney from McKenna, Long, and Alpridge. He quotes and says, "I think the FAA will have initial rules out before the end of 2014. Want to put money on that, Max?
Yeah.
"In fairness to the FAA," he says, "it's a complex set of circumstances the agency has been handed, and now they're under pressure to get things done." I actually kind of get the feeling that this is probably not far off the mark, that the FAA has to do something at this point, especially after the last legal ruling that there has to be some sort of rule. So besides, there's nothing more permanent than something that's temporary, to quote various people over the years.
Yeah, I don't know if they have a strategy to do something like that. I think the FAA is probably more inclined to want to issue final rules once and not to incrementally introduce UAVs into the national airspace. But I'm increasingly thinking that they may not have the option of following that strategy, but we'll find out.
Well, we're still waiting for lost rules, we can talk about lost. One DJI Phantom reward for finding. The article from the StarTelegram.com in Texas was, Mansfield woman says missing drone freaked me out, quote unquote. An 18-year-old student with the hope of becoming a filmmaker was flying his DJI Phantom when some sort of failure occurred. It went down around some homes, but couldn't be found after a two-hour search. So what does he do? Well, he pretends it's Lassie and pins up signs everywhere with lost DJI Phantom reward if found. Well, one woman found the flyer and contacted the police, the mayor's office, and even state officials, thinking that she was being spied on.
Yeah, she really had a strong reaction.
Oh, you're so diplomatic.
She thought that there was some pervert flying this thing around her house, looking at her and what she was doing and that kind of thing. And that's what caused her to raise such an issue. It turns out that she and the owner of this Phantom ended up missing each other on the phone, but ended up texting each other back and forth. And this exchange is related in this article. It's kind of entertaining. I won't read the whole thing, but just to give you the flavor of it, her first text to the guy was, I did not find your, quote, toy, but am quite disturbed that you think it is lost in my yard. Can assure you that if such object is indeed found on my property, it would be destroyed. How dare you? And so it went back and forth. In the end, it worked out okay. The drone flyer's father, turns out, was a police officer who ended up talking to the woman and kind of explaining the whole thing. And, you know, to her credit, she calmed down and understands. And so it was all good in the end. But kind of the lesson from this is that, you know, this is just one data point, but I think it represents a lot of people out there who are apprehensive about the idea of these things flying around the neighborhood, over their house, wherever, from a privacy standpoint. It's an education issue, I think, David.
Well, yeah, and that's why we set out to do this. There's still a lot of people out there in the mainstream world that thinks the word drone equals small little vehicle that will spy on you as you're getting dressed in your bedroom, or large vehicle that has hellfire missiles that will blow you up unattended. Over the last year, we've seen a change in the tone, and the knowledge seems to be filtering out through the general public, but we have to be careful as an industry. People are still going to react in ways that are negative because there's been so many years of bad publicity for right. UAVs or drones, and this is just one case. Luckily, it came out to be a good thing, but I can't blame the woman for her reaction. I mean, we've right. been basically told there's drones steal your privacy and drones blow up people. So if you're going to be hurt, if you've heard that for the last 10 years, then the answer is you shouldn't be surprised. And the best part about it was the kid that was actually flying it was actually doing the regulations and was following the rules and was trying to be legitimate. And, you know, he was honest. It's not often that people will say, you know what, I lost my drone in your backyard. And it just, it's a positive and a negative. And I think, I guess, Max, like you said, it's a good example and a good way for us to learn as an industry.
Something just occurred to me. Does it say in the article if he ever found his Phantom?
I
don't think it ever said.
I don't, yeah.
I'll have to go back and reread it.
It's one thing flying a drone and losing control, but if you're running it by your own mind, what does that actually mean, huh, Max?
Oh, this was really something. This is from the Gainesville Times. UNG students test drones to be controlled by thoughts. Now, UNG is the University of North Georgia, And there's a project funded through the Center for Undergraduate Research and Creative Activities that's using, get this now, brain impulses to control a small quadcopter. And so what these folks are doing is they have an electroencephalogram sensor headset that they wear. And students are actually experimenting with controlling this quadcopter by thinking about movement without actually moving to the right, to the left, up, down, and that sort of thing.
Well, it's not unbelievable. We have a lot of technology, especially with like amputees and stuff, where we've talked, where they've worked very hard on using brains to maneuver things or pick up things, etc., to manipulate false arms or legs. This is just one step further, but it does definitely add a new variable to first-person view, doesn't it?
It sure does. And it's a fascinating concept. And sort of the really interesting part about this, I think, from my perspective, is that, you know, advanced research in different technology areas oftentimes costs a lot of money. You need to get some funding. The hardware is expensive. Developing the software is expensive. It can really, the cost can spiral up pretty quickly. But here's a case where these folks are doing some really significant research, but at really low cost. I mean, it doesn't cost that much for a quadcopter. They've got the sensor. You know, that's about it. And they can, you know, use this UAV to develop some really interesting technology. So that's pretty cool. They say it's not easy. It takes some training and some practice to do this, but they're learning a lot about sort of this, you know, man-machine, this mind-machine interface kind of thing. So great research, fantastic stuff.
I just hope they improve the hat.
It's all about appearance, right?
Well, you know, if you're going to go fly in your quadcopter in the park, you might as well look good.
You got to look good.
So the next set of series of stories were sent from a friend of Airplane Geeks and someone who we regard highly, which is Isaac Alexander. You can find him on Twitter at Jet City Star. He is on the pulse of everything aviation. I don't think a day goes by that we don't get an email from him or a tweet. But there's all of a sudden all sorts of regulations about hunting with drones, hunting drones, yeah, drones hunting people. It sort of was an interesting set of collection over the last week, huh, Max?
Isaac kind of kicked it off with a link to an article in Ars Technica, which is titled "Alaska Bans Hunters from Using Drones." And this article describes how the Alaska Board of Game wants to ban hunters from using drones to track animals. Now, it's already illegal in Alaska to use manned aircraft to spot game and then kill them on the same day. And that's the article that Isaac sent. The thing to me is that why do we have separate sets of rules? I mean, why do we have rules that, you know, you can't use a manned aircraft to do this, and so now somebody develops an unmanned aircraft? To my way of thinking, why do we need a whole set of new rules? I mean, if it's manned, unmanned, who cares? I think it should be about, can you use aircraft to hunt the game?
But you've worked with lawyers your whole career. You know that the one word changes the whole tone, so we have to regulate everything. This is kind of like, I'm not an anti-gun activist, but I've always thought, if you're going to go hunt deer, why do you need to do it with an AK-47? My opinion is it's kind of overkill. Using a UAV to hunt seems to me it's a bit taking the fun out of the hunt. You're supposed to be there out in the woods. You're supposed to be tracking and using your skills and using technology. It's like, okay, why don't you go shoot fish in a barrel? I mean,
you make it too easy, huh?
Right. Well, but then someone's going to come back and tell me, well, but we need an underwater drone to shoot the fish in the barrel. It's like, no, it's, you're right. I think part of this is, why do we have to regulate something like UAVs differently than we do an aircraft? I don't know. It's just overregulation, but I guess common sense is out the window, huh?
Well, we also learned that, you know, Alaska's not the only one with a law like this. Colorado also bans the use of drones in hunting, and we found that in an article in wideopenspaces.com. The Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission banned unmanned aircraft, quote, from hunting, scouting, and any other pursuit involved in the taking of wildlife. Now, this article, it mentions a group called the National Association of Drone Sportsmen that it says was recently formed. And it says in the article opposes this kind of ban. But, you know, I searched for them on the web, and I found the National Association of Drone Sportsmen, but with a Facebook page only, except that this seems to be a group with a different kind of a mission. They say their mission is to promote the safe and humane hunting of drones through preserving and protecting their natural habitats and establishing safe and effective ways for humans and drones to interact in the wild. Is this a goof or is this serious?
I think anybody whose slogan is NADS and their motto is Go NADS, I think we can constitute it as a joke. I did go look at the Facebook page today, and it is kind of humorous. It's a little more on the absurd side than the guy that was writing the official drone licenses. It's a joke. You want to be able to go hunt the drones and shoot the drones and make sure that you protect them and preserve them in their own environment. So we'll put a link to the Facebook page in the show notes. It is kind of humorous. By now, you know it. Max and I like a good joke, and this is one of those. What's really even more funny is the fact that it showed up in a legitimate article.
That's right.
Sometimes people need to just lighten up a little
bit. Have a sense of humor. Well, one final item on the drones and hunting issue is we found something in U.S. Sportsman titled States Mulling Legislation to Ban Drones. And this says that the U.S. Sportsman's Alliance is pushing states to take up legislation. Now, this is the reverse of what we've just been talking about, legislation that protects hunters, anglers, and trappers from harassment by unmanned aerial drones while exercising their legal right to pursue and take wildlife. We see some activity, legislative activity to prevent hunters from using drones to hunt wildlife. And this is the reverse of that. This is something that's designed to prevent people from using drones to bother hunters as they hunt wildlife. So I guess every perspective is represented here.
But keep in mind that we have talked about in the past that in Africa, one of the biggest growing uses for drones is to prevent poaching.
Right.
We've talked about environmental organizations pursuing people using drones. So I can understand why the Sportsman's Alliance would take a negative view. I mean, I guess a lot of this shows that, you know what, a drone is a tool.
Right.
And it's just that, a tool. And there are different ways to use that tool for good and bad. It's amazing that the same vehicle, let's use our ubiquitous DJI Phantom, hunters can view it as a tool to be able to get better game, as well as the enemy, because some environmentalist is monitoring the fact that they're not using the proper techniques for hunting and doing a little illegitimate hunting or proving that they're hunting out of season. So I think while we are very, very pro UAVs and drones, we got to keep in mind that, you know, a drone is simply a tool.
Right.
And a hammer can be used for good, and a hammer, if you hit somebody over the head, can be used for bad. So it's the same thing with UAVs. But we must push on. We've got way too many stories.
Yeah, the next one is an editorial in Spokesman.com. Bill imposes preemptive limits on promising technology. And maybe mostly what we'll do is just direct folks to the link in the show notes. But the Washington State Legislature has passed anti-drone House Bill 2789, which is really trying to address privacy concerns. And in this editorial, the author refers to this as speculative lawmaking, just looking at the negative uses of UAVs, not positive ones. We'll have a link in the show notes to the actual bill, because it is kind of interesting in the issue, I think, in the issues that it tries to address with respect to privacy issues when it comes to drones. A lot of it is actually directed towards state use of drones, police and so forth, in making sure that people's privacy is protected and that, you know, warrants are obtained when surveillance is undertaken, things like that. So it's an interesting read.
Talking about interesting uses of drones, one of the high tension zones in all of the world is North Korea and South Korea. And evidently, in a recent exchange of hostilities, you know, it is a sort of a powder keg and could go off at any time. South Korea had some sort of blue drones that they've never seen before come across the border and crash land into South Korea. And evidently they're indigenous to North Korea. So it's another one of those, could this be the match to launch the fire? So we'll put a detailed explanation of what South Korea found and the implications in it in the show notes. But this week, we also had one of my favorite stories by a former Speaker of the House about birds, and that is the Block Island Rural Delivery Service. And this is using gulls like Amazon wants to use drones. You don't need to use drones, according to this. You can use seagulls. They can be trained, and they can fly the packages in the mails around Block Island. The restaurants are going to use them to deliver food. The only problem is sometimes seagulls get a little off track, so you might need to worry about it arriving a couple days late or a couple of hours late, you know. And
they're also messy birds. I mean, I hope there's some kind of shielding between the, you know, the gull and the package that it's carrying that would, you know, deflect that.
Especially the food, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I hope the food. So
it's a funny piece.
Even though we're a bit late, it was a very good April Fool's article. But let's talk about what should have been an April Fool's joke, but was reality, our video of the week.
Oh, yes. This is from AvWeb. Tooth extraction by drone?
Yeah, I saw this and went, really? You know, the only worst thing is, I know that evidently a couple of years ago, I remember someone using an Estes rocket to do the same thing.
Oh, no, that's nuts. I thought this was crazy. So in this video, there's a father and a son. I guess that's presumably the relationship. And the son has a loose tooth that's really almost ready to come out. I mean, this tooth is really almost ready. And he ties a pretty long length of dental floss to the tooth. And on the other end of the dental floss string, he ties it to his quadcopter. And up it goes, and out comes the tooth.
Now the question is, now that we have a tooth drone, I wonder what it pays for the tooth.
Yeah.
I guess we're going to put this one in the category of, please do not try this at home.
Absolutely.
While it's very interesting, folks, we here at the UAV Digest seriously do not recommend this for tooth extractions and or joint separations and or whatever other medical uses you're going to use your quadcopter for. So, but definitely check that out. And I guess it's time for that big portion of the episode, feedback. And boy, do we seem to be getting a lot of it. And we're not complaining, folks. Keep it coming.
We heard from a number of folks. We heard from Bobby Mills. He attended a prosecutor's conference, and one of the sessions was entitled Attack of the Drones, Illegal Use of Unmanned Aircraft in Texas. And he sent along some of the course materials.
We're working to get permission to hopefully post the lecture, because the deck that we saw was really well done, a lot of humor and a lot of really good information on the various levels of privacy. And basically, if you go fly it over your neighbor and she's naked by the pool and you take pictures and then you post it to Playboy, that's a Class B misdemeanor, and it's a fine of $2,000 and up to 180 days in jail, besides the lawsuit coming from the individual. We're going to work with Bobby, see if we can get permission to post the notes and maybe even get the lawyer on the show who did the presentation, because it was excellent. So we're looking to share for that with you. The next one was Andy from Liverpool, England. Hi, Max and David. Firstly, I love the show. Keep up the great work. Well, we're trying. You mentioned in Conservation Drones in episode 31, and he flies with Sergey Witch. We're going to reach out to him, but basically he talks about using the drones for observation and stuff. So again, people are feeding us stories, so we're doing our best to try to come up with these people. Another one was from Peter, who found aerialworks.co.uk, and we're going to put them in the show notes. They do some amazing photography work with UAVs, and I got to admit, Max, I like a hexacopter with a retracting skid mechanism on it, so the camera's just hanging out with no interruption. That was just plain awesome.
That was awesome. These guys at Aerial Works really look like they know what they're doing. There's some real professional work done there. And actually, David, when I envision in my head sort of the perfect UAS I want to build, it's kind of like what those guys are flying now. In learning more about how much that might cost me, it's maybe not quite realistic, but at least it's a goal.
Well, speaking of UAVs and your journey, we're getting spring weather. Have you gotten out and flown that thing yet?
No, I got the batteries charging up, and sometime in the next few days, I'll get out there and see if I can get back into learning how to hover without crashing the thing.
Well, you know, you got to keep us posted, because
I will.
I only do UAVs in the scale plastic method, though, you know, I keep thinking one of these days I'm going to get bit, but I think we're running along there, my co-host. What do you think?
Yeah, it's time to wrap it up. I want to thank you guys for listening to the UAV Digest. This has been episode 34. Be sure to find the show notes at theuavdigest.com. Or if you want to go directly to this episode post, there's the shortcut, theuavdigest.com/34.
And of course, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest. Don't forget, on Twitter, we're at UAV Digest. And of course, we love feedback, and you can send us feedback at feedback@theuavdigest.com. Or don't forget, you can go to the website, theuavdigest.com, and leave a comment there. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. If you love us, leave us recommendations there. And last but not least, and I ordered our first stuff, if you go to cafepress.com/theuavdigest, we got some stuff up there that you might want to take a look at, like mugs, and I'm still trying to find the shot glasses for our little FAA drinking game, but we'll get that done too. And again, thanks to all of our listeners. We've gotten hundreds of emails over the last couple of weeks, and everyone's been so positive, and we, Max and I, feed off on that. And we love reading the articles. And if we don't mention it in the show, don't worry. At least one of us or both of us will answer the emails. And it's spring here, and you and I need to get out, and you're going to go fly your quadcopter. So signing off, this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.